Hello, Baggies fans, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Baggies Broadcast, sponsored by the Kettle and Toaster Man. My name is Johnny Drury, and as ever, I am alongside Mr. Lewis Cox, the ENS's Albion correspondent. And again, we are talking about a successful few days for the Albion, a fantastic Mother's Day. Albion give mothers up and down the West Midlands a very good present on Sunday, a 4-1 victory in that blistering second half, 3 points at Huddersfield, and the playoff charge is well and truly on. Coxie, how you doing? You all right?
Hello, Johnny. How are you? It's a bit late in the day for us, this, isn't it? Used to wrapping up these at 10 a.m, but we're it's dinner time basically, isn't it? I need to get my stomach rumbling on the air.
I know, mate. Dinner time. You sound posh there, and I say breakfast, dinner, tea.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah,
you're posh, and you're from posh parts. No, out, you? So you're gonna say lunch and dinner, don't you?
Not, but it's my my wife got me onto that breakfast, lunch, dinner. Yeah, it's terrible that I was very much a dinner tea man growing up, but hey, we all mature, eh?
Yeah, we do. We're recording this later in the day. We're going to be all talking about Huddersfield. We're going to talk Shilan Patel. Coxie had the chance to sit down with the Albion's new majority shareholder slash owner last week. So we're going to talk all about that. We've got all your questions to answer, all the four left from Huddersfield, and we'll look ahead to Bristol City on Saturday. So as we said, recording this on a Tuesday evening, it'll be out on Wednesday morning. But we'll start with Huddersfield. We'll start with the chat. Some of the four left from it, really. Some of the key points to discuss. Coxie, just as a short reflection on Saturday, I thought it might turn out to be one of Albion's more important, maybe more significant wins of this sort of half of the season, even the season as a whole, really. Just how it went from being so diabolical in the first half to being so brilliant in the second.
Yeah, I think we said it maybe on Sunday, Johnny, and certainly written it since. I think that half-time for me in West Yorkshire was, I realise this phrase and cliche sounds a little bit dramatic potentially, but a little bit sliding doors, I think. Yeah, half-time, 1-0 down, one of the worst halves under Corbran, realistically, certainly one of the worst halves of the season. Didn't feel very inspiring, did it? Didn't, you struggled to see where a shot was coming from, let alone an equaliser. Hold our hands up. I had some confidence going into half-time that, you know, Carlos Corbran could show why he's paid the big bucks and work his magic at the break and do what good managers do and turn it and make those little tweaks, those changes, those that we could all see, couldn't we, that playing it out from the back, Albion were getting smothered and it wasn't working. So, but it takes a head coach who's worth their salt to, I don't know, be bold, make those changes that is going to affect the game, not just personnel, not just subs, those tactical tweaks. And it was chalk and cheese second half, wasn't it? And it was available. It was clear right from the start of the second period that it was going to be a very different second half to it was the first half. But credit to the players who still had to deliver. Players came out for the second half, didn't they? And there were no changes. And I was pleased with that because I thought it gave the 11 the chance to right their wrongs, really. But as most said at halftime, wouldn't have been excused for making a raft of changes, really, at the break. Fellows, others bringing them on, but no, the 11 had their chance to implement the changes and it blew Huddersfield away, didn't it? Let's be honest. Turning their back line, going a bit more direct, running in behind, they couldn't handle it from the start of the second half. But credit to the players because you've still got to produce, and Albion produced 4 goals in 22 minutes, which was a blitz, wasn't it? It blew Huddersfield away. And yeah, it was an excellent victory, and I agree with you, a massive one in the context of 10 games, 9 games left. Dropping points there, a draw wouldn't have been ideal, would it, really, with the rivals sort of breathing down their necks as they were. It would have left a 1-game swing in terms of 3 points. A defeat there would have left just a 2-point gap and would have been disastrous, really. Let's make no bones about it. So to win so commandingly and open that gap back up to 5, and that kind of 2-game swing, it's basically 6 points when you include goal difference as well, isn't it, Johnny? So, huge second half, hugely significant, I think. And without wanting to sound reactionary, I'm, and we spoke like this on the back of QPR, didn't we, on our mobile pod last time out. I'm fairly confident in Albion's position in the top six now. I'm not saying I think it's done. because 5 points isn't massive when there's still 9 games left. You know, what's that, 27 points to play for? But I'm confident in Albin Thorthorn's record, in the attackers they now have, in the players due back from injury, the other side of the international break coming up. I'm confident that Albion are well placed now. I think it would take quite the slip that it doesn't look like it's coming for them not to make it.
There are quite a few sort of stories in that second half and points to come out. We talked a little bit about Kyle Bartley on the post-match video on Sunday, and I subsequently wrote a bit of a piece sort of talking about him and his sort of resurgence from, you know, less than 18 months ago being booed, well, being cheered off by his own fans after a dismal defeat against Birmingham, to, you know, being Albion's, you know, the only player in that side in the first half on Sunday who actually come out with any credit. And then second half, thought he was brilliant, you know, scored his goal, you know, albeit a real scruffy one. But given the position he's in at the moment, in the fact that really, really, when he's been fit, right from the start under Carlos Corbrand, he's been the first name on the team sheet. And I think we can't forget that before Corbrand come in, he'd had a dreadful run. He'd had that Birmingham game. He got sent off at Millwall. It's not like he was coming into the Corbrand era in any sort of form. But straight away, Corbrand turned around his fortunes at Albion, and he's been Corbrand's man ever since then. I talked about in my comment piece whether he will get a new deal. He's one of the, you know, many Albion players out of contract in the summer. You know, we're led to believe he's one of the higher earners in the squad, and there is that need to bring down Albion's wage bill with all these new financial rules coming in. I'm going to ask you a question now, Coxie, which Albion fans...
I know exactly debating. What question you're going to ask me, Johnny.
If, you know, it falls into two parts, probably Championship or Premier League, does Kyle Bartley... This is not, do you think he should get one? It's, you know, do you think Albion will give him a new deal at the end of the season?
I will lean at this current moment, Johnny, towards yes, but clearly we all know with the asterisks of within the financial means.
So, let's say, for example, talking hypothetically, he potentially might have to take a reduced contract, you know?
Oh, I think that's clear. Yeah.
What would you, Albion don't go up, you know, what would you give him in terms of years, or would you even give him a new contract?
Yeah, so I would. I think I would be even more inclined if Albion didn't go up. So we're talking Championship. I don't think it's any secret that as a long-serving player, he's one of the higher earners in the squad. And clearly that can't be maintained. Premier League, again, slightly different conversation, isn't it, Johnny? We know that drastically changes figures when you win promotion. But at this level, given his age, I mean, he's only 32, I think turning 33, I believe. So, yes, getting on, but not, you know, not mid-30s yet. But certainly another year, at least I would. But at this level, on reduced wages, just in terms of where Albion are as a club and where they need to be in terms of dramatically reducing their overall bill. And I think Bartley would have to understand that. What would he realistically be able to garner elsewhere? I think at this level, he's still an excellent centre defender. I think one of the leading in the division. Look at how he's been in the last year, 15, 16 months, really. He's been linchpin, hasn't he? Dominant, both boxes. Excellent character from what we hear, what Corbyn sings his praises. A real leader amongst the side, I would say. So, yes, but it's the figures have to work. And obviously, you know, Bartley has to look after number one. And if those reduced terms don't quite work for him, or he thinks he can go elsewhere and get one final bigger deal, then... No, he might look to do that, mightn't he? Albin talking about reducing numbers. He may see a club elsewhere in this division where he could be a leading centre-half there on bigger money, potentially, on, you know, however much, a few thousand more, potentially. I don't know. But I know Corbyn's a fan. And just in my opinion is that, yes, I would. But like, I think realistically it's only going to happen on a shorter-term deal, if the figures work for everyone. And that's that balancing act, isn't it? It's Albion getting it down, and it's where Bartley sees his worth. Probably see his worth as some level, because he's playing every game, isn't he? Yes, he's had a couple of injuries, but every time he's available, he's playing. And let's be honest, he's playing well.
What about if they went up, if Albion got this season? Is it a case of, you know, you go up, you've got a bigger financial, you know, I hate the word war chest, but you've got more finances behind the club. However, you know, Carl Bartley's been there in the Premier League with Albion, you know, and they come back down. Would it be time for both to maybe cut their losses if they went up to the Premier League? Would Albion be looking at a, you know, higher caliber of centre half? You know, what if they went up? Would that picture look different?
It's difficult. It's definitely different. It's definitely different. I think if Albion are still in the Championship next season, look, there's a separate conversation of Kipper, isn't there? And you know, while Albion will, I'm sure, want him to stay, it's by no means a given. So I think if Albion are still in the Champ, I think Bartley, assuming he stays, is still a key regular in the 11, I would suspect. I don't necessarily think that's quite as guaranteed if they go up, and that's nothing against him. I just think Albion would have to perhaps invest, perhaps look for that new face. Look, we know there's the Caleb Taylor factor. Where does Shemi Ajayi fit? You know, questions to answer. But I think, I believe Albion would perhaps have to recruit at least one just to higher the level of their defence, potentially. Look, Eric Peters, is he going to be around? The likelihood is no because of his advancing years. So where does that maybe one recruit of Premier League standard? Yeah, every club that goes up tries to raise the level overall, don't they, by recruiting. You know, obviously you get financial rewards for going up by recruiting a player of the calibre, of the level, be it from here or overseas. So what I'm saying is, would that throw Bartley down the pecking order, perhaps if he did stay as a Premier League player, to maybe third, fourth choice option? Potentially, I don't see him having that status if Albion were a Premier League club as a key regular in every game that he may still do if they're a Championship club. So would they be more inclined to give him less inclined to give him a deal if they went up? Potentially, but I suppose there's a world where it still happens as a squad player. It's an interesting debate, isn't it? And it's funny because, you know, for Carl Bartley, maybe see Matt Phillips, who, you know, I'm sure in the weeks to come, Johnny, the international break on the other side, we're going to get onto plenty of debates about Matt Phillips, aren't we? Probably the same conversation we're having right here and right now. But, you know, mentioned Kipper, mentioned Alex Mowat, there are others, mentioned Peters there. There are others out of contract, we know. And not that there's quite a different debate for Championship versus Premier League, but many questions at the minute and many things for Carlos Corbin to ponder, certainly. And like, there's Ian Pearce, obviously head of football ops, will be working together with that. And then there's the fact of agents, representatives. Look, this is how football works. They'll be speaking to clubs elsewhere, garnering interest, weighing things up, possibilities of what clubs can offer. What do players want? Do they want a new challenge? Many factors that go into all of this. So, interesting months ahead, Johnny, really.
Another decision Carlos is going to face on one in the more near future on Saturday. Brandon Thomas-Santé came back in the squad, back off the bench at Huddersfield. Simple question, Coxie, does he come straight back in now on Saturday to start? You know, we've been talking about how he's been playing in recent weeks without a recognised sort of centre forward. And then on the opposite side of that, we've been saying prior to that, you know, Thomas-Santé isn't that out and out striker. You know, he's just been playing that role in the absence of, well, with all the injuries that Albion have faced. Now, I know Andy Byman got an assist on Sunday. Jed Wallace has played today, he's worked hard, but it's been difficult for him. He's not an out-and-out centre-forward. You know, does that all lend itself into BTA starting on Saturday?
Good question. Not necessarily considered it yet, but what I will say is Andy Byman can't play, can he?
No, he can't. Yeah, true.
That's a striker down straight away, or certainly a forward. So I think the question we're asking is it Wallace up front or is it Thomas-Santé? I don't. So he played, what did he play? 15 minutes the other day at Huddersfield. That's not a lot, is it, after a best part of a month out? Would he be ready to start from the off? Maybe, but I'm not sure. Albion are at home, so there's a bit more onus and emphasis on them being on the front foot, them attacking. So that leans towards naming a striker, doesn't it? Certainly. But would I be surprised if Jed Wallace led the line again? Not at all. Albion are so stocked in that department, aren't they, that they can afford to have Wallace as the front man. And any of Fellows, Johnston, Dean Garner, Swift, all right, they're Vyman down. But so many options in that next line that can cover for having Wallace up top. Maybe there was a world where there's a tweak and it's almost like two of those mentioned. You know, someone else in support of Wallace is what I'm trying to say, whether it's Johnson or Grady. So it's an interesting one for Corbran to weigh up, actually. If you were to ask me what would I do, I'd maybe lean towards Wallace. I think, while I realise some listeners in this, to this, some Baggies fans won't like the idea of no natural centre-forward at home against a lower side from the division. I get that. And, you know, my argument doesn't send out the right message. We're not set to start in a striker. But is Thomas Asante ready? Or do you keep him from the bench for, say, 55, 60 minutes when Corbran does like to make a change? Fresh legs, ready to impact the game if needed, in terms of if it's still 0-0, if Albion need a goal. So I'd go slightly lean towards Wallace leading the line, I think, and just give Thomas Asante that one bit more sort of breather. And yeah, have him as a good impact sub. He's shown he can be a good impact sub, hasn't he, Thomas Asante? Because yeah, he's got that energy that Tyrone defenders don't quite think they fancy it. So yeah, could be a good option, maybe.
Just brings me nicely on to Wallace and just a point I've been thinking about the last few days, and I've seen a few comments regarding Wallace from Albion fans on social media. I don't think he's in the best of form at the moment. Is there an argument that he doesn't make up Albion's two best wide men at the moment? We've got Mikey Johnson, who just can do no wrong. You know, we've got Tom Fellows, who, although has been a little bit quieter in the last couple of games, still showed a little glimpse at Huddersfield. You know, at QPR, he set up Dean Garner's goal. You know, is Wallace, on current form, is he in the top two wingers, wingers that Albion have got? Or is he, you know, is it maybe time to start with those two and for Wallace to step out? That's providing that he doesn't lead the line again on Saturday. And Thomas,
no, Sanders, I understand that. I understand the debate and question, no doubt. And form's a funny thing, isn't it? And current performance, because it is a little bit vague. How far do you go back, sort of thing? But I suppose if we're talking about a handful or less, you know, two or three games or so, you could make a strong case for that. I think you could make an argument. But I think we must all remember that Wallace has done and is doing a job for the side, really. You know, ask Jed Wallace in his heart of hearts, where does he want to play? On the right wing, obviously. You know, we want to play up front, but obviously he's going to do a job for the side, as every player would or should. Wallace is a skipper. Look, we know how much it means to him, and he's a real team player. But obviously he'd rather be in his natural position. So I'm slightly loath to judge him while he's been playing that role, Johnny, I would say. I think he's honest as the day is long and works hard and puts defenders under it physically. It's been pretty thankless for him, I would say, over a few games, having to do that role that is a little bit alien to him, albeit he can do it. But let's be honest, Corbran had no alternate, really, did he? I suppose Vyman came in, but we don't know quite where Vyman was physically. The other options, yes. I mean, Dean Garner scored back-to-back, didn't he? Coventry and obviously QPR. From that number 10 position, from in the kind of 4-2-3-1 just behind Wallace. Now, was Dean Garner electric in those games? And did he have brilliant games in those games? No, I don't think so personally. But he was productive, wasn't he? He was effective. He scored goals in both of them, taking his tally up to 7 for the season, which is a good return given AFCON and injuries. I think he's one off his best Albion return, Grady, which was obviously the loan. So, I mean, that says a lot, doesn't it? However, was he electric in the games? Potentially not. Fellows, I think, played a good part from the bench at Huddersfield. He was the first change, wasn't he, around 55 minutes, and helped change it in his side's favour, albeit the tactical tweak had a real impact. You mentioned QPR, and Fellows was hooked, wasn't he, just after half-time when kind of the hosts were coming back into it. But he'd already assisted Dean Garner, you know, for that second goal, and he's effective, isn't he, Fellows? His crosses make things happen. He gets assists. It's a good problem to have, isn't it? Look at John Swift. Realistically, for the last, I don't know, half a dozen games or so, there's a couple I missed while being away, but not really been anywhere to be seen, has he? And when coming on in late cameos, not quite shining through. So, yeah, options to have. I suppose at least Corbin probably thinks he can make changes at the moment and rotate. And it's a good debate about Wallace, it is. But we haven't quite seen him out in his position for a little bit, have we? And I wouldn't be against seeing that. Look, I know I've just said he'd probably lead the line again on Saturday, but I'd like nothing more than to see a striker in and Wallace out on one flank. But that opens up a debate, doesn't it? Because Mikey Johnson's certainly not coming outside at the moment, is he, Johnny? He's the magic man's, everything he's touching is going in, and I think you have to keep him in. You have to keep him in. So then does Fellows come outside, as he did at Huddersfield, is it Dean Garner? Options to have, and it goes back to what I said about being confident about the playoff place, actually, that while these players all remain fit and available, these players who are effective and scoring and assisting in the Championship, I think Albion are very well placed. Look, if there was three more injuries in this forward line, I'd be much, much less confident about that 5-point gap. But I think the recruitment work they did in January, obviously notably Johnston, certainly Ryman as well, Fellows' emergence over the season, I just think certainly the Johnston one has breathed life into Albion's, new life into Albion's playoff push, really, and certainly looks like helping get them over the line, doesn't it? Because you take out Johnston's goals, 6 goals, and significantly fewer points, isn't it, over the last few games. And I think his push has made a hell of a difference, hasn't it? 6 in 7 games is incredible. So lovely options at the minute for the head coach, and they won't be lost on him given how it was earlier in the season. And look, Thomas Asante back, brilliant. We hope in a couple of weeks on the other side of the break might even be Josh Madger too as another striker to call upon, and Matty Phillips as another attacker to call upon. So that's why I just think, touch wood, heading into April, Albion look potentially so strong.
You talk about John Swift there. Can you see Swift getting back? You talk about Dean Garner. I don't think he's had his two best games against QPR and Huddersfield or Coventry either. You know, but obviously scored 2 and 2 in 2 of those games.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like John Swift's got a bit of a point to prove, maybe to Corbrand, maybe to the Albion fans. Now, when he's firing, he can be one of the best creators, probably outside of the top 2 or 3 sides. I've got Premier League quality squads. But I think he's still, even though he's been around for, you know, now we're not far off 2 seasons, and he has produced some moments of magic, still feels like he's got a bit of a point to prove. Especially now he's out of sight.
He's not. He struggled since that injury, hasn't he? I remember, was it Norwich Boxing Day at home, where that game where he was sensational, and we kind of thought he was back, and then was there maybe a little setback after that, potentially fitness wise, and not seeing him play at his level, the level he can, the level he was at the start of the season pre-injury. Since then, and that's a shame for him. I'm sure he's frustrated by it, because I think, again, since January, others have arrived. Fellows has obviously emerged as a starter. Other attackers have arrived in Johnston, in Vyman, who are, you know, ahead of him in the pecking order at the moment, realistically. Different type of players, yes, but it's just frustrated. And it's funny, isn't it? We've got someone as good historically in the division as John Swift on the bench as an option. It's sort of great, because, like, well, if you're struggling to unlock a defence, you've got a John Swift to bring on and can make things happen, and still can. But I guess needs to come on and do it. And going to get to an occasion, maybe, situation where Albion are 0-0 or maybe 1-0 down, 2-1 down, and it's not happening. And Swift needs to be that man in that moment to change the dynamic, doesn't he? I think in games, in cameos, I can remember him trying things in terms of getting shots away, maybe just not coming off for him. He's not had the most game time. His cameos haven't always been the longest, have they? And you're coming on in tricky circumstance, like QPR last week. Kind of, it's all going the other direction, isn't it? So he needs a moment that falls for him, I think. Because since the injury, it hasn't happened, has it? And we don't know how much of that injury had an effect. You lose your rhythm and momentum, don't you? Maybe lose confidence in some of, on the physical side of it. A bit of fitness it takes to build back, obviously. But John Swift's game's about quality, isn't it? And look, Carlos Corban said to me a couple of times, Swift's at his best when he's at full intensity. He has to play at that full intensity. That's what Carlos Corban demands. And yeah, he's just not at the forefront of that pecking order at the moment, is he? And I think really needs a moment And look, there are 9 games left, hopefully plus playoffs. But as I mentioned, maybe Madger on the horizon, maybe Phillips on the horizon. It's a real battle and real depth in those positions. And some of the others are flying, aren't they? So Swift needs a moment. At the minute, he can't really see where a start's coming from. I don't know, Johnny, is that potentially fair to say? I mean, Dean Garner seems to have monopolised this new 10 role for him. Carlos Corberan certainly thinks Dean Garner can play that 10 role. Corberan has said Mikey Johnson can play the 10 role. Wallace at times has been central, hasn't he? So Swift's got competition, a lot of it, and he's got a lot of players to get through. But I think he just needs one of those cameo moments to come his way and summit to 4-3 and make a difference in a piece of quality. And I think that hopefully could ignite everything for him again.
Coxie, at the top of the podcast, we talked about how you had the privilege and the pleasure to sit down with Albion's new controlling owner, controlling shareholder, Shilen Patel, last week. I think it was middle of the week. Thursday, you sat down with him and other members of the press to talk all things Albion. And Albion fans will see a lot of comments in today's Express and Star. 3 or 4 stories, actually, talking about why he wanted to buy Albion, what lured into the club. He's talked about planning for the future. And he's talked about sort of the football structures of the club and changes he's potentially looking to make. Coxie, just first off, first chance to sit down. This will take out about 3 questions in our fan questions, because they've all been asking when you're going to sit down with Mr. Patel. What did you make of him? Obviously, he's been making a good impression on Albion fans through the interview that he did with the club, and he's quite vocal on social media and some of the stuff that he's putting out on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X because it'll always be Twitter to me. I know a lot of people say Twitter. Don't they say X, formerly known as Twitter. But he's been commenting a lot on Twitter. What did you make of him? What were your first impressions?
Privileged, I suppose, to be in a position where on the Thursday, less than 12 hours, Johnny, after coming home from QPR, after we recorded that podcast, we were bleary-eyed as we...
I was going to say, did he enjoy his trip to QPR? I'm sure he was a bit nervy up there in the stands, I imagine.
You know what? He did. And some of the sort of chat we had was kind of, how that night summed up the rough and tumble and the championship's quirks, didn't it? He's watched every minute of Albion since his interest September, October time. So he knows all about it already. And look, he's, a student of European football for a US individual. He knows about the game. So, he's not a total novice to this sport of ours. But, he certainly felt, I think, the atmosphere at Loftus Road and, kind of the bear pit of them versus us, and maybe the injustices of obviously the hand of said and the decisions that went Albion's way that night, and the atmosphere around him, because make no mistake, the executive boxes at any ground really are in with the home fans, aren't they? So he would have felt the I'm sure he would have heard the colourful language and all of that. So that was a true experience. But as I say, we I think we're I'm speaking for myself, pretty tired as we checked into Albion's training ground last Thursday. Lunchtime, early afternoon, to have just a bit of just a introduction, really, a chat, to catch up with Shilen Patel. It was ourselves at the Express and Star and 2 other local media outlets, obviously regulars in covering Albion, were the fortunate ones in being invited down to have the chairman's company. At the chairman's request, this was obviously Shilen Patel carried out an interview last week with Radio WM, and those are the quotes that are available today to read. And we, as I say, 24 hours later, we had this sort of briefing, this chat, informal, really, just going over a number of subjects. Obviously, can't bring total specifics because a lot of it was said, obviously privately off the record, but covered a lot in that radio interview I mentioned that we sort of brought quotes too, that I believe the full Radio WM interview will be available to listen to on 7 p.m. on Wednesday. So make sure you check that out if you want to. But Shilen Patel, many of his quotes we've carried online today, so give those a look. It was a pleasure to be in his company, actually, and it was a thoroughly enjoyable, entertaining, and very impressive hour, I would say, hour or so, maybe a bit longer. as we all ate the sampled the delightful food at the Albion training ground, I will say, as Carlos Corbyn has stated.
I was
going
to say, yeah, and, we know that it's decent stuff. Coxie, just in terms of what you...
Patel, I have to just say, Johnny, poor Shilin Patel was so busy speaking and answering our questions that he barely was able to get through his food, so I did feel a little bit sorry for him. But don't worry, Johnny, I in true style, I finished my plate, no problem. But he was great. It was really... I left the building really impressed, as I was told I would. And really confident in him, in his people, in his views, values of his family, and just his passion and emotion about it. I just left with the impression that he's very much the right person to be in this role. That the Albion as a club feel to me quite fortunate and lucky to have ended up where they have with him. We've seen straight away transparency, haven't we? Care, attention, and obviously, look, caveat, proof's in the pudding with all of this, and we might not know for a few years, but absolutely the right people, person with the right intentions.
Yeah, that's what it seems. I think there will be a section of Albion fans, and there's probably a section of myself, really, who he's got probably... This is not from his own doing. This is from what's come before him, that he's got something to prove a little bit, and there will be a bit of trepidation from certain Albion fans. But from what I can gather from the outside, from what I've heard, and you know, I'm privy to some of the conversations that you are, Coxie, and from what we hear about him, what we've seen of him, you know, what you've just explained there, you know, and what we've seen of his presence online, everything seems to be all right at the moment. Obviously, there are still big problems at the football club, and there's stuff that needs sorting out. But I think if you look at his track record in business, in turning things around, I think Albion seem in safe hands. And the fact that you read a lot of what you've written up today, you know, there's a piece on planning for they have to plan that they're going to be a Championship club next season. That, you know, that's nothing to do with not having aspirations to get up to the Premier League via the playoffs. But I think it's all it's all sensible as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an owner coming in saying, I'm going to spend X, Y, and Z, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. You know, Albion haven't had that. But I suppose to an extent early in the Lye era, even though it probably wasn't Lye money, they spent a lot of bad money on some pretty average players. I think for the majority of Albion fans, that'll be music to their ears, that someone has got hold of the club who, yes, wants to progress it to the top level and grow Albion and get back at that table that they were sat at for eight seasons. However, he's not going to put them in a rocky situation to do that. And I think from what I've read all the pieces that you've written today, and for me that's probably my main takeaway from it all, and the probably comfort I'll take from his words that, you know, he's not gonna gamble on this to get Albion to the Premier League, which a lot of owners would come out and say, we're going to do this, that, and that, we're going to get to the Premier League within X amount of time, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. He's not doing that. And I think that's probably the most comforting thing for Albion fans.
I think the days are probably, if not gone, then on their way out, aren't they, Johnny, with these financial rules in that. And look, we're still seeing clubs at this level speculate in terms of the spending in a bid to really get there, get over the line. And the G word really, isn't it? Gamble. You know, if you get up and it comes off, then great. Maybe you won't be bitten on the backside. And yeah, even, you know, you get the Premier League riches, you might come back down and have the luxury of the parachutes. But if the gamble doesn't work and you don't get up, and it's not easy to get up, is it? If you end up in the playoffs, it's an absolute 1-in-4 lottery, let's be honest. If you gamble and you don't get up, then you're in big bother, aren't you? Big bother. And anyway, the rules, obviously, that are coming in, financial rules, will be stricter and tighter on that. So, yeah, you're spot on. I think we've said it a number of times, haven't we, about a security and a structure of the club, not speculating, not gambling, because look, the model of the previous ownership. Look where it ended in terms of an inability or unwillingness to invest, and a lack of parachute payments as a result of not being able to get where the club needed or wanted to be. And I was a terrible spiral heading nowhere, wasn't it, other than down and down and down, certainly in terms of finances. In terms of him as a person, and his family and values and background. Philanthropy and philanthropic is where the Patel sort of heritage and legacy in terms of his father, Dr. Kiran, who is co-owner in terms of Bilko Football, as we were told on the takeover, and Shilin's grandfather, who's no longer alive. Obviously, Kiran was born in Zambia, so the family, the background is, as I say, Zambian, and their whole sort of values and ideas on life, you know, business life, is to help others succeed. And the background in that healthcare and education, building hospitals, building medical schools generally for underprivileged, and all of that. And look, people listening to that might say, yeah, great, what's this got to do with running a football club? Well, maybe not a lot, but I think you can tell that you've got the right people, you know, in charge, people kind of with hearts as well as business heads who care about things beyond maybe just the cash pot. Shilin Patel, this is something I suppose maybe that we learned, I would say, from certainly the interview Shilin did, and then the briefing, the chat, off-record chat we got to have. So as people will have had the chance to hopefully read, Bilko Football was originally a brainchild of Shilin and one or two partners in terms of global football academies rather than football clubs. So it was to, you know, not just in the States, this is worldwide, wherever they realistically could, was to grow from the ground football academies for kids, school children age, to offer, not with the view of becoming professional footballers, because obviously that's speculative and doesn't come off very often, doesn't it? But the education, the sports science, whatever role in life they could get, whatever profession in life they could get from these academies, that was his aim. So his aim was to mix the kind of legacy of his father, his grandfather, in terms of offering something, offering a future, a job, an education, a health care, mix that with the football side of it. And that football platform of kids, fitness, education, everything, health that comes with a football academy, and producing like that around the world. And that was what he envisaged, really. Now, we know about Bologna. That's been written about as well today, the Italian club who Shilin has a minority investment in. He was part of a US takeover in Bologna with some partners of his about a decade ago, I think. They were a second-tier club at the time, Bologna. And actually, into his tenure, won promotion via the playoffs, I believe. He was telling us about that.
Bodes well.
What a nail-biting time it was. And now Bologna are fourth in Serie A, by the way, looking to finish in the Champions League spots. So he's got sort of vested interest there. But look, he had the interest there, and that was he was a part of it, but a small part of it, you know, as a minority job. He was very much like, I want to own a football club of my own. I want to do this. But his target, his group's business group's target, realistically, was this, you know, as a result of his family morals and vision, was this academy structure, as I say, spreading the wings. Because hospitals and schools and universities the Patel family have built, you know, this is worldwide. This is Zambia. This is India. They've done it, as well as the States. This is people around the globe who have profited in life, health, education from this family. So that's what they are. And that's what Patel was trying to do in the football world. However, then, you know, as I said, he has always had ambitions as a football fan, a soccer fan, as he would have said as a youngster over there, had ambitions of owning a football club. And I suppose that's when Albion came around as an interesting and attractive proposition, an attainable proposition, as we spoke about on a few occasions, an affordable proposition in relative to what they are, where they are, where they could be. Yes, with problems, baggage of the previous existing ownership as it was, but something I suppose Shilin thought he could come in and have an effect with financially, but also with his vision, with you know, I guess the expertise he can bring with people he will be working alongside. We'll get into that And just his vision and what he sees. He had the history of the club, the community. We all know Albion's a family community club. And as he said in his first interview, family is the key word with Shilan Patel, isn't it? So if you can bring a family nature of Albion into his owning a football club life, then that's absolutely ideal. And the work of the community, the women's teams, the academy, you know, structure is all going to be massive parts for him. I know, look, the primary focus is always on the first team, but there's many layers to this, as we all know. So I thought that was really interesting, learning about how his kind of vision was in the academy worldwide. You know, his vision for his legacy in life and business, like his father and his grandfather's, had that football element angle to it. And now he's kind of accelerated his process to end up with a club where he wants his legacy to be, you know, and his family have left such a legacy behind. It's unbelievable, influencing and affecting hundreds, thousands of lives yearly. I think I heard a quote, wrote something out today where it was like producing X amount of 100 doctors a year from this medical school, you know, to heal and treat people worldwide. And go back to saying you've got the right people there with the right hearts and heads. And yeah, just his journey, really. It was fascinating to hear all about it. And you think, certainly from a human perspective, these are the right people here, you know, aiming to do the right thing. Yes, they want the football club to take on to make money and become a worthwhile, successful investment. And that will obviously only happen if it's successful on the pitch. You know, Shilan Patel knows this. He's a football fan. He's a very successful businessman who knows a lot about investment and finance. So, look, it's not all sort of meant to be like singing and roses, let's grow an academy and not be successful on the first team pitch. That's what ultimately they want, clearly. But, I was left, going back to it, I left the building really impressed. It was a pleasure to hear all about it. I hope the pieces that Baggies fans will read today and listening to this will find it interesting. Really, really impressed. I think really impressive character, leader. Parts of the conversations he was having with him, he got quite emotional, openly emotional when he was speaking about the work of his dad and grandfather, which I thought, you know, just showed a sort of humility and honesty to what he was saying. You know, very real to him. Yeah, you know, there's a little anecdote that Baggies fans will be able to read about his wife, Parisa, I think. Forgive the pronunciation there. But the Southampton game at the Hawthorns, the day after the takeover was kind of made public, Shilan's wife flew over to London. Long flight, by the way, 9-10 hours, drive up to the Black Country, that whole journey, just to be there in time for that game. And Shilan was saying that he was so grateful of that, because his wife got to see it and feel it. You know, to them at home, it was just sort of like a pipe dream that's almost hard to visualise and have a tangible thing. But his wife was there, you know, in the box with fans waving and clapping to them. And, you know, he rather humbly said, you know, a bit sheepish, really. Didn't know where to put myself in that moment, you know, people clapping. But he was so happy his wife got to feel it and visualise how big this thing actually is, you know, how much this thing actually means to people, a whole community and a whole family of supporters around the world, not just in the Black Country, you know. So lovely little anecdotes to pick up from him that, you know, hopefully Albion fans can read about. And it was a pleasure to be in his company. And, you know, as I say, in the interview we did give, which we've carried some quotes on, he also spoke about, you know, the makeup of how he sees the club in the short to midterm future as well, which I guess we'll get onto.
Yeah, we'll get onto it now. We've got a couple of questions later on in the podcast.
Yeah.
And we're going to get onto them in a second. Just a shout out to our sponsor, as always, all our podcasts here at the Express and Star and the Shop Star are sponsored by that man, the Kettle and Toaster Man, who, as we say every week, has got some fantastic products at some even better prices. He is a graded product specialist, and some of his prices and some of his products are phenomenal. Here's just one for you. You can get your hands on a first-class Swan fridge freezer. He's got some unbelievable Swan fridge freezers as well. An unbelievable piece of kit for a fantastic price. Loads of products like that. Head along, if you want, to thekettleandtoasterman.co.uk. Or if you want to head and have a look yourself, see what he's got in store. Head to Thorns Road in Briley Hill. So as always, massive thank you to the Kettle and Toaster Man for his sponsorship of the Baggies broadcast. Right, time for some questions. Now, a few of these have already been answered with regards to players and also what Coxie's just been giving us there on Mr. Patel. We've got a question here from Mr. Brewski. I'd be interested in your views on playing it out from the back versus lamping it upfield. Playing it out caused endless problems yesterday. Thoughts, guys? Yeah, Albion got caught quite a lot in the first half at Huddersfield. Thought Huddersfield pressed Albion really well. But Albion looked a little bit slack. They looked quite nervous, I thought, in the first half on Sunday. And I was having this chat after, actually, with our friend Tony Bomber Brown. And he was sort of saying a little bit like I was saying, that it was quite slow, the build-up was quite lethargic. And I always feel that when Albion play quick and through the lines and play forward fast, they are a better side. Now, you've always got to take into consideration the opposition. And I thought Huddersfield played really well in the first half and sort of combated what Albion did. But I think the example I always go back to is Preston away, where Albion were from the off, front-footed, getting the ball forward quickly. And that may be down to the way that Preston played. But in terms of the question that Mr. Brucey's asked, in terms of, you know, playing it out versus lamping up, I listened to it. I'm going to quote another podcast now. It's a BBC podcast called My Mate's a Footballer. It's with comedian Joe Wilkinson and lead striker Patrick Bamford. And they were talking about tactics the other day. Now, Albion fans might have heard this. And they were talking about different styles of play. And I think the best managers currently don't play one style of play. And I think Sunday was a massive example of that. You know, Carlos Corberan has seen that probably his default way of playing, his stock way of playing, wasn't working. He's tweaked it. Albion have gone direct, not in terms of the sense of lumping up to the centre half and getting flick-ons, but, you know, bypassing the midfield more. And it worked. And I think the best managers, even, you know, you talk about Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, you know, yeah, all right, for 80% of the time they will play the same way, but they can also mix it up as well. And, you know, obviously Corbrand's not in that bracket at the moment, but I think there's a time for both. That'd be my answer to it, Mr. Brewski. And I think that's why Albion are lucky they've got the manager they've got.
Johnny, if you haven't got the calibre of, you know, Guardiola or Klopp's players, then I think you have to be able to mix it up, don't you? But I think as well, I totally agree with what you just said there. But, you know, also Corbrand, you know, he's not too stubborn, or he wasn't too stubborn not to change it. There are some who only sort of tunnel visioned have that one way. And if it doesn't work, they keep going and it doesn't work. But it's clear what the change needed to be. But we're not geniuses, are we? Yes, we could see it, but it's still got to be operated on. And you've got to get the message out there so it's clear to players to change it. And yeah, it's a good point. I love the lamping it bit in the question. Just love that kind of...
It's a proper old school British football term, yeah. Lamp it up there. I think what you see as well in modern football, managers who play that type of football in terms of very route one, very, you know, as we all think of direct football, you know, back to front in one hit. It's, you can't play that way all the time. You know, even in that style of play, you've still got to mix it up as well. And I think that, like you say, that's why Albion are lucky, because they've got a manager, you know, who can, you know, a bit of a chameleon almost, who can change Albion.
The game's changed, hasn't it? Look, Johnny, it's all in the last few years, certainly, it's all the rage now. Young coaches to followed what's gone on and been successful at the top. And now in the Championship, lower down, League One, League Two, we've both seen it, Johnny. Goalkeepers passing it on the 6-yard box, on the edge of the box. It happens now and it will continue to. And yeah, but I'm trying to remember the point I was going to make there, but that happens now. You know, it doesn't happen just with abroad coaches. Obviously, no. Carlos Corbin had his education elsewhere. It happens with British coaches. I mean, look at Russell Martin, you know, that it happens with a number of British coaches, young, successful ones.
I think there's a time and a place for it. And you mentioned sort of calibre of player. You know, Albion have got the calibre of player to do it in this division. Yeah, they're going to get caught sometimes. But, you know, and it's almost like a high risk, high reward strategy, which is what Patrick Bamford was talking about on this podcast. It's, I think the percentage of mistakes that come from playing that way is relatively low. But on another part, as you can tell, I listen to a lot of podcasts. There was another one talking about non-league football and Sunday league football. And they were saying that, You've even got Sunday League teams now trying to play across their 6 yard box out to the back. You know, even levels above that in non-league, you know, they're players that probably aren't good enough to play that way. But I think Albion are good enough to play that way. You know, against certain teams will change the way that they play to counteract it. Huddersfield did that very, very well in that first half on Sunday.
Johnny, I was watching, sorry, mate, just quickly, I was watching Chelsea Spurs last night, or Monday night, sorry. And Neville referenced
Chelsea Newcastle.
That. Yeah, that one as well, mate. Yeah. Oh, you can tell how much I was paying attention. As I was finished.
You're probably watching something like Love is Blind at the same time. I know all the you know, the shock
No. Do you know what? Chelsea Spurs was a Monday night game earlier in the season, wasn't it? It was that crazy one, wasn't it? I think from memory. Yeah, Chelsea Newcastle. And Neville was on comms. And so he mentioned risk and reward in terms of, I think it was Chelsea's keeper, Petkovic, isn't it? Petrovic, with the ball, and the defenders were just waiting there in the 6 yard box to receive it from him. And Newcastle got beat easily in the end, but Newcastle's front line was just like pounced on the edge of the box, waiting for the second that keeper passed it to the defenders on the 6 yard box. I think Disasi and whichever other defender was playing. And they were just like visibly petrified of what was going to happen. And
but that's when you talk about timing. That's where you talk about time and place.
Definitely.
I think with Albion, we've seen it. We've talked about it in terms of when you're playing out from the back. Yeah, it's great when it works, but it's almost taking responsibility. You know, in that situation where they're so highly being pressed so highly, you just get it and play it. The goalkeeper gets it and plays it down the channel. I think, you know, although there is a caveat to this, Alex Palmer's distribution has been called into question in recent weeks. I think he's very good sometimes at making a decision where Albion are being pressed. There's no pass on. You've just got to hit it long. And
yeah,
I think that's, you know, obviously the higher caliber of player, the better it is. But that's, I think that's, you know, ultimately how that system works. I just want to come on to another point because we've got three or four questions on this that I'll knock it all off in one. A funny one to start it. Dikos has asked, when will Paul Sharma become Albion's director of football? I don't know quite where that one's come from. But there's a few others here. Nathan Aldridge, Richard Downing, and there's another question a bit higher up as well from another Albion fan, who was asked about potential changes in the, you know, the structure at Albion. Talking about a director of football, do we think one's going to be implemented? You know, what changes will be made? From what Albion fans will have, if you have read what's been online today, from what Shilan Patel has said on this, he's not going to rip up Albion's football structure and bring in a raft of new people. But I don't think what that rules out is, I don't think it rules out bringing in a technical director, you know, which is the, you know, the modern theme. Every club you generally has one these days, aside from a small pool of clubs. But it doesn't seem like there's going to be, it seems like Shilan Patel is pretty happy with how things are at the moment, and he will add to it as and when. That's what I can gather from reading between the lines.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I reiterate that the interview and the quotes with Carrick today, we didn't directly individually do that interview and ask the questions, obviously, of written up the quotes. But so from what I understand and gather, the football side of it, the football structure, I don't anticipate or expect any immediate changes in terms of that structure, in terms of expecting a technical director appointed next month, a sporting director, a director of football. From what I believe, that's not the case. So, look, that doesn't mean way down the line when Mr. Patel gets his feet sort of under the table and that will never happen. But as it stands, that's how I see it. Obviously, Albion operate with the head coach under a head of football operations in Ian Pearce, former head of recruitment, wasn't Ian Pearce, and head of football ops now, which is a different title to all of those ones we just mentioned, and it will be different in some roles, but the head of football operations is not, I would say, overly dissimilar to what we were just, those other roles we were just talking about. Now, Ian Pearce has changed from head of recruitment to head of football operations. There's a change, you know, that's from overseeing recruitment and full scouting to overseeing football operations, which consists of a lot more. So he's that man in that position at the moment, and I'm hoping further down the line, when it comes to Ian Pearce, to be able to have a chat and interview, things like that. I think it's definitely worth mentioning that Ian Pearce had a good January. Mikey Johnson and the work Albion had to do The club had a good window, and it's telling, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of the playoff race. So that's where that is. I don't expect imminent change on the football board, the football side front. The other side remains to be seen in terms of the club structure, in terms of Bilkel Football's makeup above Albion. You know, as Albion's controlling group now, it remains to be, we'll get more insight, I think, further down the line. There's more we'll be able to bring listeners and Baggies fans, and more we'll hear further down the line at some point, hopefully in the not too distant future, about the partners with Shilin Patel. Those will be working closely with him on this, and that'll be interesting. Just to yes, on those individuals, who they are, what they what they'll be looking at, perhaps what their sort of ideas are. So you know, it will not just be Shilin Patel, I don't believe. So, but we'll get more, I think, insight and understanding of that for a bit further down the line, certainly. I know that the chairman's keen to come over as often as possible, certainly in these early stages. I think, you know, maybe around monthly. I know he's due back in some point in April to take in a game or two, and probably May. I mean, look, looks like Albion are going to hopefully, touch wood, be in the playoffs, Johnny, so I'm sure he'll be around the country for then, and look, we might get some more light shed hopefully on the, as I say, the overall structure of his associates and colleagues. That'll be interesting. I know his dad, Dr. Kieran, is not the football fan that Shilin is. I think that's fair to say. That's the son and the chairman is very much the front of this operations and the big football fan. But you say Dr. Kieran is co-owner, isn't he? We were told when the takeover went through, so that was interesting. But yeah, the overall makeup remains to be seen, and hopefully we'll get some more clarity on that as and when.
Neil WBA's got in touch. Do you think the new ownership will go down the same route as other clubs have by selling the naming rights to the Hawthorns? Seems to be a popular way of raising quick revenue. And how would it go down with a fan base? The B&M Bargain Stadium has a ring to it. Do you know what, Neil? I was thinking about what it could be. If I was... Well, even now, because we eat at the Hawthorns and the food is unreal. But I would love it if it was the Toby Carvery Hawthorns, to be tucking into one of them every Saturday or every other Saturday.
I was going to say mixed grill, Johnny.
Mixed grill.
The Desi mixed grill or something.
Yeah, yeah. It would be nice. But on a serious note, I don't think that's something that Albion fans have probably got to worry about. I think from everything that Coxie said, you know, when he talked about... Shilin Patel extensively earlier in the podcast, he's a man who understands the club and the community, and I think he would probably understand that the uproar there would be
if
they tried to name. And I think as well, it's harder to rename traditional older grounds, if you get me. I know it has happened, but it's much easier to rename,
That's true.
A soulless, as I call them, and fans will get sick of this, a soulless bowl on a retail park that hasn't really got a name, than, you know, naming a famous old ground. So don't think there's much to worry about on that. We've got a question, two questions, same topic. News on contracts, contract negotiations, in particular Mowat and Kipra.
We slightly touch on them at the top, didn't we, when the Bartley debate and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is it... Look, I think we've said before, haven't we, with Kipra and Mowat.
I think on those as well, it probably won't be something we'll hear about to the end of the season, because Albion are in such a position where they're pushing for the playoffs. You know,
yeah.
Carlos Corberan probably won't want any distractions. He certainly won't want to talk about it.
No.
And, you know, their contractual negotiations as well, as much as we probably want to hear positive news on them, unless they're signed, there's probably going to be a limited amount we will be told or be privy to or be, you know, told on the record by Carlos Corberan.
Players have their own views and have to look after themselves and what they want at this stage of their careers, what they value, they think they are in terms of a wage, what, you know, after excelling at Albion, they may think they may be able to get financially elsewhere. I don't think there's any doubt Carlos Corberan would want both of them. But Carlos spoke last week, didn't he, when I think I asked about Mowat and his situation. He needs everything to come together. It's not always, in fact, seldom that easy, is it really, to get everything lined up? Look, we know.
Yeah, it makes it more difficult, you know, let's talk, say, for example, you know, we've talked about Carl Bartley and the need to reduce the wage bill. Someone like Alex Mallett, who's having a fantastic season, you know, outside those top clubs, probably arguably one of the most informed midfielders in the division. Yeah. You know, say, for example, you know, I don't know how much money he's on or where he sits in the Albion wage structure, but if we get to the end of the season and Albion can only offer him a deal on reduced terms, but then one of the other clubs who are going to be flying at the top of the division come in and offer him, you know, a 4-year contract or a 3-year contract on, you know, better money, you know, as a player, 9 times out of 10, the player's going to take it as well, isn't it? So that moves into that argument that you just been mentioning about players have to look after themselves. But I don't think we're going to hear much before the end of the season in terms of updates.
Look, it's not, we can give our views and opinions, can't we? And I'd like to see both of them stay, but we can't. It's not one of those where every time we see Carlos Corgan, which is a few times a week, you get a chance to ask him questions. We can't go and ask him the question on it every single time because he'll very, 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 very quickly, Johnny, get fed up and sick of it and, you know, refuse to talk about it at all. So, sort of hear one or two things, hope at some point to be able to bring something in terms of an update on their future. But from what I would believe, the two players the club would very much like to keep hold of, but it's not that simple, unfortunately.
Yeah, Dan Tudge has got in touch. He's put 10 to go. There's actually 9 now after Huddersfield. What's the points total we all get? And he said, will we see Callum Marshall again? Callum Marshall not in the squad at Huddersfield. We'll talk about the points one. I've worked mine out, Coxie. I've backed Albion to get 18 points in the last 9 games.
Have you?
Yeah, what are you saying? I think you're more glass half empty than me. So I think it's going to be lower.
Am I? Okay. Hold on. Well, I just got
18 points, 1 defeat. I'd put Albion to, you know, lose just one of the last 9.
How many does that take? What does that take Albion on to? 18, 81?
Yeah, more than enough to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, 9 points left, so possible 27, isn't it? I think you're in the right ballpark, Johnny. I do, actually. 9 games left. So.
And I think aside from a couple of tricky away games, you know, there's probably a couple of tricky away games, and then you've got away games at clubs who are scrapping for their lives, people like Stoke and Sheffield Wednesday, but you're back
out there. At the bare minimum, Johnny, I'd expect around 5 victories within that, considering there are 5 home games left. Yes, maybe it's unlikely to win all of them, but 3 or 4 of them and, you know, maybe an away win or two in there. 5 wins, 15 points and a couple of draws. I don't think you're far off at all. I think that's the ballpark figure. You're kind of 16 to 18 area, which, as you mentioned, is comfortably enough. If we're talking about mid-70s generally being enough for the playoffs. What is it now? 63. So to get to that sort of 75 point, it's only...
Not far away, is it? And Dan's also talked about Callum Marshall, wasn't in the squad at Huddersfield. Carlos has talked about him in the last few weeks, and I'll probably just move that question on. A lot of fans have said, what's the point in signing him? I think it was a case of what Albion could get. They wanted to bring in a striker in January. He was a player who was very highly thought of, you know, in academy football or the top of youth football. And it's not a gamble. Albion are probably not paying a great deal. And it's one that, you know, he maybe hasn't had the opportunities yet. Whether he will in an Albion shirt, I'm not too sure. But I think it's a sign that was low risk and could have ended up being high reward. And it might still be, you know, he's still going to make cameos, I'd imagine, between now and the end of the season. But yeah, I think we'll see him again.
You know, if Albion need a goal in the playoff semi-final, he might come off the bench and... Yeah. Bundling at the far post, mightn't he? You know, I think Carlos said it well, actually, when he was asked about Callum Marshall a little week or so ago, and he said, "Look, Callum Marshall knows this himself. He's coming for a first loan, first taste of senior football, as well as he's done 23's level, 18's level. You come into a big club in West Bromwich Albion, certainly a big club at this level, at the right end of the table." There's no way on this earth where you're expecting to regularly start games. It just doesn't happen. It isn't how it goes, is it? Now,
if he was going to be in that position, Albion wouldn't have been at the front of the queue.
And Carlos Corgan said that Callum Marshall knew this and he was aware of it when he was, you know, they were in talks. So shouldn't be a surprise. Might have we have seen him have longer cameos, potentially, but we've seen him in a few games so far. He's looked sort of raw, hasn't he, and hardworking. But Corbin also made the good point about how much he will pick up from the regular training. You know, and I know that's not what people will want to hear and being around it. And the disappointment of not playing will help for his next loan, wherever that is, further down the Championship or into League One. Maybe that's what he needs. But look, at the time in January, is for the reasons you laid out there, it's a move that absolutely worked for Albion, isn't it, in terms of the body. And look, you know, are we being hypocrites here because we're talking about Albion not having a striker available and having to play Jed Wallace up front? People would be like, well, just start Callum Marshall. And yeah, fair enough. But obviously, Carlos Corbin's the man who makes that decision, and he's looked at it in training or whatever and thought, well, Callum Marshall's not ready to be starting. And that's how it is. And would Carlos Corbin have known that before the loan? Probably not. But you then see it through the door, don't you? I suppose. But I think the bottom line is he was never going to come in and start games.
No. Baggies fans, thank you very much for your question. Apologies for the ones we couldn't read out. There was a good one from Sunil Patel, talking about other thunderbolts that you can remember that Albion have scored, and he's referenced a few. I'm just going to chuck in there. There was a goal that Chris Brunt scored, I think it was against Crystal Palace, where he's absolutely lashed it in from only about 15 yards out. I think it crashed in off the underside of the bar. Albion fans might correct me on that. But yeah, that would
which
be
one,
my...
Which one was Brunty's from absolutely miles out? I mean, like, near the centre circle. Or have I dreamt that? Like, there's one...
He scored one at Everton from quite far out, but that wasn't really a thunderbolt. It was more a sort of curling one right in the postage stamp. But yeah, it wasn't... it wasn't from the halfway line or anything like that.
Someone in the comments referenced one that sprung straight to my mind for obvious reasons. Gira. Opening day. That was an absolute corker, wasn't it?
Yeah. Some win.
I'm a huge fan of Richard Sneaks's, the stanchion, the ball getting wedged.
That was a good goal.
And a quick one on that Darren Bradley goal. One of my good friends in life and childhood, best friends, is named Bradley, and Brad after Darren Bradley for scoring that goal. So
there we go.
I've got a Brad as a mate who's named after the man because of that goal, basically. And I remember him showing me that goal as we were growing up and being like, this is why I've got my name. So there you go. There's a scorcher with a story behind it.
There is. Baggies fans, thank you very much for your questions. As always, Coxie just finally, Bristol City on Saturday. Going to be a tough one. I imagine there might be a couple of changes, but in terms of those five wins we talked about, for me, Saturday is probably going to be one. Well, probably has to be one of them. You know, we're not going on about a victory before Albion have even completed it. But I'd imagine that's a game that they've got to target and get 3 points. And it puts them very, very close to, you know, securing a playoff spot.
Disappointing anything less than three, wouldn't it? Look, Bristol City are mid-table and they're not one of the poorer sides in the division. But realistically, they're not going anywhere, are they? I don't think this season. So you'd hope with everything on the line for Albion, the need to get over the line as soon as possible, and the general Hawthorn sort of mood and form and attacking options, let's be honest. Hopefully Mikey Johnson can continue it. I mean, he's not, you know, we're not going to get to the end of the season where he's scored 11 in 12, are we? You wouldn't think, but hopefully the purple patch can go on as long as it can. Realistically, the fresh legs of Thomas Asante back, obviously the security of Bartley. I'm optimistic. I think they'll have enough Saturday. I do. I see a 2-0, I think I'd like to say at least. It'd be interesting to see if we see Gardner Hickman. I imagine he's able to play because it's no longer a loan. And he's now a Bristol City player, so he'll have a point to prove, won't he? Certainly. If he starts, I'm not sure if he's been in the lineup. I'd have to check that. I'm optimistic, Johnny, and you're right. Going into that break, certainly with bodies coming back, you always want to win that game before the international break, don't they? And I think I'm right in remembering, obviously, first international break for ages, Johnny, going back to end of last year. Didn't Albion keep losing the games before the break? Huddersfield at home was and Blues away on the Friday night.
Could have been, Blues.
There's a little international break eve curse to be addressed here, isn't there? Because going into international breaks are bad enough, as we all know, but on the back of defeats, they're absolutely abysmal. So that is why Albion must win on Saturday.
Yeah, hopefully they can break that international break hulu from early in the campaign, as Coxie says. Coxie, as always, thanks for your time. Baggies fans, as always, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Until next time, from me and from Coxie. Boing, boing.
Boing, boing.